Our opening hymn for this morning. This joyful Easter tide, away with sin and sorrow. My love, the crucified, has sprung to life this morrow. Had Christ, who once was slain, not burst his three-day prison, our faith had been in vain. But now has Christ arisen, arisen, arisen. But now has Christ arisen. Death's flood has lost its chill since Jesus crossed the river. Lover of souls from ill, my passing soul deliver. Had Christ, who once was slain, not burst his three-day prison, our faith had been in vain, but now is Christ arisen. My flesh in hope shall rest, and for a season slumber, till trump from east to west shall wake the dead in number. Had Christ, who once was slain, not burst his three-day prison, our faith had been in vain, but now has Christ arisen. Amen. So we have Joseph in ascendancy in Egypt. He was in three different venues, in slavery and in a hard time, sold to slavery to Potiphar and in his household. God blessed the household of Potiphar, and Joseph succeeded until he was betrayed by whom? Potiphar's wife tried to seduce him, and then when she was maybe afraid that this would get out, she accused him of trying to seduce her. So he ended up in prison, and in prison, he again rose in favor to the prison guard, and God blessed the prison because of him, and then he became an interpreter of two dreams, which gave him a foothold into Pharaoh's house. And here's your double jeopardy question. Which servant of Pharaoh lived to see another day, we might say, and would eventually mention Joseph to Pharaoh? The butler did it, right. That's exactly right, the butler did it. And the triple jeopardy question then would be, how long did it take the butler to remember Joseph to Pharaoh?
2 years.
2 years, very good. You got a lot of good details. And Pharaoh has two dreams that have one interpretation, and Joseph interprets the dream that there would be 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine. And Joseph recommends to Pharaoh that he get a wise guy, someone who's very wise, to manage the disaster so that they would put away during the fat years in order to see them through the thin years. And who does Pharaoh appoint but Joseph? Who could be wiser than someone who has God on his side and is able to interpret these dreams? And so Joseph becomes powerful in Egypt. And as Ed McMahon would ask Johnny Carson, how powerful was he? He only had one who was above him, and that was Pharaoh, which is very incredible. Okay, so we can imagine that for those 7 years, Joseph manages things well. And true or false, he stored all the excess grain in the pyramids.
Yes.
It doesn't seem very efficient. There's more stone than space in those pyramids, so that seems rather unlikely. But he did gather those things. And we can imagine after those 7 years that it probably took maybe one bad year in the territory for people to start feeling the pain economically and physically. And in the second and third years, that would accelerate. People always have a little bit extra, but not enough to see them through 7 years. And we know that this Pharaoh, or this famine, was not just a local famine, but one that embraced the neighboring countries too. And where are Abraham and the other 11 sons of, or no, Jacob and the other 11 sons of Jacob? They're back at home in West Allis, right? They're in Canaan. Why would Judah be a little of an inaccurate answer? There was no Judah or any tribal lands until after the Exodus, which is well after this four or five hundred years. That's okay. And that's the other question. When Joseph and this event is happening, how much land has God given the children of Israel in the promised land of Canaan? Is it that candy bar, Nut and Honey? Oh, that's right, it was Assyria. Actually, they do own some land. Anyone? Here's your quadruple jeopardy question. Pastor Will's grinning, he knows it.
You know the question before you ask it, and I know the answer.
He's really got me red. I think I better... I'm feeling a little naked up here right now.
You can't answer that question.
I just asked the question. How much land did they own when they went down to Egypt? We went to seminary, that's why. They owned a cave. What was the cave for? For burying Sarah, Abraham's wife. He dickers with the Canaanites, and they finally sell him the camp. And here's the pentuple jeopardy question. What was the name of the cave?
Is it Machpelah or something like that?
Very close.
I'm
very close. Mamre.
Oh, no.
No, you had the first part.
You had the M.
You had the M.
I don't know where that is from.
Machpelah? That's another settlement afterwards.
Okay.
A famous one. One that's prominent. You've read your Old Testament. I congratulate you, young lady. All right. Let's go ahead then in Genesis 42, shall we? Okay. I have permission. Here we go. When Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" And he said, "Indeed, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down to that place and buy for us there that we may live and not die." In other words, what are you looking at each other and asking what to do? It's obvious. There's grain down there. Go down there and buy some. Now, do you suppose Abraham would have the wherewithal to buy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's a sheikh. He's a sheik. He's a rich guy. He did have lots of flocks and that sort of thing. Jacob, yes. So Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. Notice not 11 brothers, but 10 brothers. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, "Lest some calamity befall him." And the sons of Israel went to buy grain among those who journeyed, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. So he doesn't send Benjamin, because he's always looking out for disaster. Disaster has struck his family already, right? He lost a son, and he believes Joseph to be dead. What evidence of his death does he have? The bloody multicolored coat that he himself identified. Oh, my son must be dead. And what did Jacob say about his mourning for his son? That he would never leave him. And we can identify with that. If you've ever been with people that have lost children. You know, when we lose our parents, it's hard. It's a terrible thing. And we mourn them. I think of my dad, if not every day, every other day. But it's something else when it's your child. Why is that? Well, the life of our children is given to our stewardship. And sometimes mom will never cut the umbilical cord, and dad will never look at his children, his sons and his daughters, without seeing them as the little ones that he dandled on his knee. And no matter how old they get, we still feel responsible for them. So there is something to this. Now Joseph was governor over the land, and it was he who sold to all the people in the land. He's in charge. Remember when he was in Potiphar's house? Was he detail-oriented or did he delegate? The answer is both. He delegated, he trusted, but he verified, in Ronald Reagan's terms. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down before him with their faces to the earth. Now somebody underlined that and made it bold. Was it the Holy Spirit? No. It was Pastor Basley. Why did he do that? I'll let Pastor Will ask the question. Why is this significant in the text? That's the dream, right? It's coming true, and they don't even know it. They're bowing down to the head honcho in Egypt. Verse 7. No, this guy's dressed like an Egyptian, walking like an Egyptian, talking like an Egyptian. And they haven't seen Joseph in a long time. That's right. Verse 7. Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he acted as a stranger to them and spoke roughly to them. All right, what do you guys want? Then he said to them, where do you come from? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. So Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. Then Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed about them and said to them, you are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land. What does that mean? That's sort of King James language. Does that mean they're visiting the flesh pots of Egypt? Well, the nakedness of the land would be the vulnerabilities, right? You're spies, and you're seeking out our weaknesses. You're seeking out where we're vulnerable, right? This is a political speech. Why is Joseph acting rough with them? Is he getting revenge? Maybe rather than showing a lesson to them, he's trying to get a lesson from them. He really wants to, you know, this is something that they used to say in grade schools all the time, that when you come into a new class, you go in there with both guns blazing and make them fear you, because you can always slack off. But if you slack off on the first day, they're going to walk all over you the rest of the time. So Joseph is first of all acting as is proper to his position as a ruler in Egypt. But he's also trying to take a lesson as to where his brothers are at. And he might be able to tell this better if they're on their toes. Let's find out where they're at. So he accuses them of being spies, verse 10. They said to him, no, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. We are all one man's sons. We are honest men. We are servants. Your servants are not spies. In other words, we're at your service. We'll do what you want. And how about this? We're honest men. Everyone claims to be honest men. That's how they want to present themselves. And what's Joseph thinking by this? Yeah. Okay, yeah, whatever. And they said, your servants are 12 brothers. They are telling the truth here, though, aren't they? Your servants are 12 brothers. And when they say 12 brothers, there's got to be pangs of guilt coming up in their hearts. But they're telling a painful truth. We are 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And in fact, the youngest is with our father today. And one is no more. He's passed on. Now that's a nice term. He's passed on. That would be a good one. It's literally true. It sounds like he's dead, but he's merely passed on, right? Passed on through the traders, right? Through the slave traders. Verse 14. But Joseph said to them, it is as I spoke to you, saying, you are spies, he insists. In this manner you shall be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not leave this place until your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you and let him bring your brother, and you shall be kept in prison that your words may be tested to see whether there is any truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies. In other words, I'm going to test the words whether you're speaking the truth. And he devises a test based on their words that would test it, right? You said you had a brother. Well, let's see your brother. If you verify that what you said is true, then we can talk. Until then, you're spies. You are guilty until you are proven innocent. So he put them all in prison 3 days. Then Joseph said to them on the third day, "Do this and live, for I fear God." Wait a minute. There's a transition in how Joseph is presenting himself. Who was he swearing by up to this point? Pharaoh. As Pharaoh lives. Now he's confessing that he fears God. So this is really a curious thing. And if the brothers were really introspective about that, what would they say? How can this be? We're the only ones that have this God, right? We're the true church. The true church is in Milwaukee, not in Detroit. No, the true church is up with my Father's house. How can this man fear God? Is there anything else that comes to their mind with that? Who knows about their sin against Joseph? Only God knows. God in them knows. Yes? Well, it certainly is 3 days that the Lord was in the prison, and that brings to a Christian's mind the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And again, there's no direct tie, but it certainly brings that to mind, and I think it's the Holy Spirit that brings those things to our minds, right? Jesus rose from the dead on the third day, and the brothers are rising from the prison with a presentation of a God-fearer on the third day. Pretty interesting. Todd Wilkin on Issues, Etc. says a wonderful thing. There's only one story really worth telling. And that's why all popular literature and much of the Bible seems to have its links to the death and resurrection of Jesus. What does Harry Potter do to defeat Voldemort? The name whose name shall not be uttered. Does
I had a question about
well, he sort of dies and rises again, not to keep you in suspense. Go ahead.
So the 3 day, 3 days he gets him out of prison, then he has his change of ways of communication with him. Is that, do you think he had time to think about it himself? Like, at first he seems to realize who these guys are, and he's, he's kind of still in character. He's second command.
Again, let's see what he says, but he's not really reneging on this test. But I think he's giving his brothers 3 days to cool his heels and to become afraid. You know, this is sort of a minor lesson in this whole thing. That is it wrong to let a person stew in their sins and contemplate their errors? God does that to us all the time, We do. And sometimes the gravity of sin does not come until we have a time out, if you will, in order to contemplate the enormity of our sins and to bemoan them. And that's part of the way in which God prepares us for grace. When he brings us down to the bottom of hell, it makes grace that much sweeter to us. And he leads us through those trials. We go through those low times in order that God's grace becomes more precious to us. And it does. And we're going to see this is a prolonged story of repentance and a long time of regret for these brothers to face what they had done to Joseph before he ultimately forgives them, which is God's will that he does. Right? Okay. "Do this and live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined to your prison house, but you go and carry grain for the famine of your houses, and bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified, and you shall not die." And they did so. Then they said to one another, "We are truly guilty concerning our brother, for we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we would not hear. Therefore this distress has come upon us." And so they are reminded of putting their brother in the prison of that pit and hearing him cry out for mercy and help. And he says, "It is for our brother's sake that this calamity is upon us." So Joseph may have had some thoughts, but But God is really doing this through Joseph. And is it for the benefit or for the bane of the brothers? Well, they're certainly feeling bane, sorrow, contrition, but it is for their ultimate good. It is good. Verse 22, so what's the plot? What Joseph says, leave one of your brothers, the rest of you take the grain so you can feed your household, but bring your brother back to me. Right? Does that capsulize it? Okay. Verse 22, and Reuben answered saying, did I not speak to you saying, do not sin against the boy, and you would not listen? Therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us. But they did not know that Joseph understood them, for he spoke to them through an interpreter. So they're having this conversation thinking that Joseph doesn't understand, but of course he does. And he turned himself away from them and wept. And then he returned to them again and talked with them, and he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. Why does he weep? Yeah, he still loves his brothers. What is he weeping over?
Their guiltiness?
Yeah, the grief that they have caused. This is a predicament. This is a stake in their heart that has been there and has been ignored all this time. And now they're actually speaking about their sin, and Joseph is the object of their sin. Does Christ ever weep? When did Christ weep? Well, he sweated as of great drops of blood. That's sort of like weeping. He wept at the grave of his friend Lazarus, who had died. Didn't he? Well, I heard someone say it. Yeah, he wept over Jerusalem. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets. Does this sound a little like this situation? Oh, brothers, brothers, the ones who kill the brother. Oh, how I would have gathered you as a mother hen gathered her chicks, but you would not. And Joseph loved his brothers, and he told them his dream. And did they love him for his dream? No, they hated him for his dream. And sold him and put him to death. He's very much like Jesus weeping over Jerusalem at this point. Simeon is taken away and bound before their eyes. Why is he taking Simeon away bound? He's the hostage, right? He's the collateral. He's the surety, the guarantee that they'll bring the brother back. The hostage. Then Joseph gave a command to fill their sacks with grain, to restore every man's money to his sack, and to give them provisions for the journey. So he gives them the food that they came to buy. He takes the purchase price and puts it into the sack and gives them supplies free to get home. This is better than Howard Johnson's. Thus he did for them. So they loaded their donkeys with the grain and departed from there. But as one of them opened his sack to give his donkey feed at the encampment, in other words, they're away, they're a day's journey, we've got to feed the animals, he saw his money, and there it was in the mouth of his sack. So he said to his brothers, my money has been restored, there it is in my sack. Then their hearts failed them, and they were afraid, saying to one another, what is this that God has done to us? Now, did anyone ever make an error to your favor in the credit card? This isn't what I said if there was an error in the credit card. And I pointed out the error to the waitress, too. But what is it saying? They're going to be looked at as dishonest. They're going to see the provisions have been checked out of the inventory, and they're going to say, where's the accounting? Where's the money that was paid for this? And there will be none. And the receipt would have been kept there. And they have the money.
So now they're not despised.
So, well, they've been set up.
Yeah.
What are they saying? We've been set up, and this is God's justice. We set our brother up, and now God has set us up. This is God's justice. Is God a just God? Yeah. But is that the intention of Joseph? Yeah, yes and no. You know, we're told about how Jacob was clever in the way that he dealt with other people, and there's a certain cleverness to this. You can't blame Joseph as being stingy, but he doesn't have to be. He's the richest guy in the land, and he gives his brother this grain, or the grain and the money that he paid for it, but he does it in such a way that it plays on their guilt.
See this money, fear, and not come back with the younger brother? Or will they actually bring it back?
Well, it puts a real cross on them, doesn't it? What are they going to do?
Yeah. So he's testing them. He's testing their faithfulness. Will they abandon another brother? Or will they, will they come back?
You know, again, we probably do wrong in imposing our culture and our way of thinking on another time or place. But it makes me ask, why didn't they just go back if they found that a mistake was made and
try to give them the money?
They were afraid of being caught.
I guess. They were afraid. Yeah, and he treated them hostily. So,
right.
And he assumed their guilt before they had to prove their innocence. So I guess that does play into it.
It's human nature.
That's a good explanation, actually. 29, going on. Then they went to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan, and told him all that had happened to them, saying, "The man who is lord of the land spoke roughly to us and took us for spies in the country. But we said to him, 'We are honest men, we are not spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no more, and the youngest is with our father this day in the land of Canaan.' Then the man, the lord of the country, said to us, 'By this I will know you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers here with me. Take food for the famine of your households and be gone. And bring your youngest brother to me, so I shall know that you are not spies, but that you are honest men. I will grant your brother to you, and you may trade in the land.'"
How long did this
take? Probably a week, you know, a week, 10 days, something like that. You mean round trip, right? Oh, yeah, a couple days.
Faster than a speeding camel.
That's I can't know for sure. I think the pharaohs were sort of up near Goshen. I don't think they're a third of the way down or so.
But didn't they have different areas where they stored the grain throughout the country?
Well, yeah.
Probably the closest one.
But they went to Joseph, so wherever Joseph in the capital was is where they would have to be, I would think. I would imagine that the local stores were for the locals, but in the capital they had enough to trade with the nations. I'm guessing, but that's my guess. 35. Then it happened as they emptied their sacks that surprisingly each man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid. And Jacob, their father, said to him, "You have bereaved me. Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more." He's already writing off Simeon. He's a lost cause. "And you want to take Benjamin. All these things are against me. Woe is me. All is against me." Then Reuben spoke to his father, saying, "Kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands, and I will bring him back to you." In other words, "I will leave my sons as a surety to you," as if Jacob is going to kill his grandsons in response to his two sons being taken away from him. But this is spoken nobly of Reuben. He's saying he's putting his precious sons as a surety. But he says, "My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead and he is left alone. If any calamity should befall him along the way in which you go, then you would bring me down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave." And so he's saying it would bring me to death. Can sorrow and bereavement actually bring a person to death?
Yes.
Yeah. It can.
I think it's interesting that when they found the money in one sack, they didn't check the other sacks.
Well, there may be some efficiency. I suppose if they opened the one sack to feed the camels, it was enough to feed all the rest. And
yeah. They didn't bother to see.
Well, they didn't. Pastor Wolf?
They also think it's interesting and a little shows the weakness of Jacob. His brother is dead and he's the only one left. Well, what about the other 10, like Jacob's sons? As if there were nothing.
Yeah.
And they did love their father, and he loved them enough too. But
yeah, we've got some of
compared with Joseph and Benjamin, and the sons of Rachel, or Rebecca, they're nothing.
Yes. But I think that's the magnitude of the loss, right? He's equating Joseph. He's the only one left from Rachel. So. Yeah, it makes you wonder how the other brothers felt about that. Still this Joseph thing going on. All right. Chapter 43. Verse 1. Now the famine was severe in the land, and it came to pass when they had eaten up the grain which they had brought from Egypt, that their father said to them, "Go back, buy us a little food." But Judah spoke to him, saying, "The man solemnly warned us, saying, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.'" In other words, if we want the grain, we've got to bring our brother. "If you send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.'" And Israel said, "Why did you deal so wrongfully with me as to tell the man whether you still had another brother?" Couldn't you keep your tongue? Why'd you have to render that little piece of information? Because they're honest men, that's right. But they said, "The man asked us pointedly about ourselves and our family, saying, 'Is your father still alive? Have you another brother?' And we told him according to these words. Could we possibly have known that he would say, 'Bring your brother down'?" Now, how many of you have ever given testimony in court? I had to give expert witness testimony once in court. And the first thing that the lawyers that I was working with said, "Don't answer anything unless they ask you a question, and only answer that question." And the brothers are saying, "We were good witnesses. We only answered the questions that he asked. But we had to answer honestly." And we told him these words. Then Judah said to his father, Israel his father, verse 8, "Send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you, and also our little ones. I myself will be surety for him. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever." Now Joseph or Judah is here showing real leadership. He's saying we could sit here and stew about this, but this is the plan of action that we must take. Now, what tribe does Jesus come from? Comes from the tribe of Judah. And here we see Judah saying, "I will take the blame of anything that goes wrong."
Judah was the firstborn?
No.
That's Christ. I mean, that's David and then Christ from that line.
How does it go? It goes Reuben,
Simeon, Levi,
Judah. Is
so
it?
Reuben was the oldest.
Yeah. They named a sandwich after him. He didn't get the birthright, but
Pastor, I'm surprised that Joseph didn't want to keep Reuben instead of Simeon as a hostage. For the reason that Reuben was the oldest, Reuben was the one brother that tried to speak up on his behalf.
Well, you may be asking a deep question, Tony, but I don't have a deep answer. Anyone have any ideas on that? Yeah?
I was thinking about that, too. I remember that when they sold Joseph to the Israelites, Reuben had gone away. And he told them, don't do anything before until I come back. So then their oldest brother who was left and when they sold him was Simeon.
Reuben was spared some of the intrigue. In fact, acted somewhat nobly during the Joseph affair. That's a good point. Justice is tempered by some things. All right, verse 11. And their father Israel said to them, "If it must be so, then do this: take some of the best fruits of the land in your vessels and carry down a present for the man." A little balm and a little honey, spices and myrrh, pistachio nuts and almonds. Take double money in your hand and take back in your hand the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. Take your brother also and arise, go back to the man, and may God Almighty give you mercy before the man, that he may release your other brother and Benjamin. If I am bereaved, I am bereaved. And so Jacob steps forth as the head of the clan and said, this is what we're doing. He's manning up and saying, I'm endorsing this plan and I'm sending you, and if anything bad happens, then it'll just have to happen. And Judah, you're not responsible. I'll take responsibility. This is what a good head of the household would do. And it's out of mercy for his brothers. So he's sending them. And the worst case scenario in his mind is, I've already lost Joseph, and now I might also lose Benjamin and Simeon, right? So he's weighing the consequences. Verse 15, so the men took that present and Benjamin, and they took double money in their hand, and arose and went down to Egypt. And they stood before Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house, take these men to my home and slaughter an animal and make ready, for these men will dine with me at noon. Then the man did as Joseph ordered, and the man brought the men into Joseph's house. This is a royal palace. And again, it's interesting. I'm sort of baiting the hook. If any of you saw that Patterns of Evidence movie, they found a palace that might have belonged to Joseph in Egypt. And so maybe we're gearing up to show that again in another couple. Maybe we'll do that again in the summer sometime. Now the men were afraid because they were brought into Joseph's house, and they said, it is because of the money which was returned in our sacks the first time that we are brought in, so that he may make a case against us and seize us to take us as slaves with our donkeys. They're sort of making asses of themselves. When they drew near to the steward of Joseph's house, they talked with him at the door of the house and said, oh, sir, we indeed came down the first time to buy food, but it happened when we came to the encampment that we opened our sacks, and there each man's money was in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight. So we have brought it back in our hand, and we have brought down other money in our hands to buy food. We do not know who put our money in our sacks. But he said, peace be with you, do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money. Then he brought Simeon out to them. So the man brought the men into Joseph's house and gave them water, and they washed their feet, and he gave their donkeys feed. Then he made the present ready for Joseph's coming at noon, for they heard that he would eat bread there. And when Joseph came home, they brought him the present which was in their hand into the house and bowed down before him to the earth. There's the bowing again. Then he asked them about their well-being and said, is your father well, the old man of whom you spoke? Is he still alive? And they answered, your servant, our father, is in good health. He is still alive. And they bowed their heads down and prostrated themselves. Then he lifted his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, is this your younger brother of whom you spoke to me? And he said, God be gracious to you, my son. Now his heart yearned for his brother. So Joseph made haste and sought somewhere to weep. And he went into his chamber and wept there. Then he washed his face and came out, and he restrained himself and said, serve the bread. So they set him a place by himself and them by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat food with the Hebrews, for it is an abomination to the Egyptians. So he's second in command, but do the Egyptians ever eat with him? No. And so they've got a table for the brothers, they've got a table for Joseph, and a table for the Egyptians. And what are the brothers thinking? Well, he's eating on his own because they're his servants, and they're his underlings, and he's set apart. But the real reason is that he is a Hebrew, and the Egyptians would not eat with the Hebrews. It's a surprising if the Jews would have eaten with the Hebrews in some ways. Because they, well, this was before the cleanliness laws, but at any rate. And they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men looked in astonishment at one another. Then he took servings to them from before him, but Benjamin's serving was five times as much as any of theirs. So they drank and were merry with him.
Pastor, that was the first time actually that Joseph had seen his brother Benjamin.
Yes.
He was gone before Benjamin came.
And Benjamin was not with his brothers when he was sold into slavery either, was he?
No.
So it's been a longer time.